Good morning. I'm Frank Vaughn. It is March 20th, 2026, and I am frustrated and fired up this morning. I am the amount of time that you have to waste in today's world dealing with CAPTCHAs and clicking on car pics and traffic lights and motorbikes and bicycles drives me nuts. And then on top of that, proving that you're not a bot, you have to constantly log into your own software on your personal computer, which I don't understand. Why can't my software just keep me logged in? Right now, my recording software, it takes me about 10 to 15 minutes every time I'm using it to get it to open, because I open it and it hangs, and then I have to end process, and I open it and it hangs, and I end process. The end result is that eventually it will function, but I have to log in again, and for some reason, I have to just keep clicking on it over and over again. I don't think things are getting better technologically. But I want to tell you some good news before I build on that theme first. Let's do good news. Now, there are a few politicians in Canada that I hate more than Doug Ford. He is false. He is fake. He's not a conservative. He's not a realist. He doesn't care about the people. And I believe that Ontario would be in the exact same boat if they had elected Kathleen Wynne all the way back in 2018. But I give credit where credit's due, if that's really what I'm doing. I don't know if it's credit. I just like what he had to say here. This is from the CCFR, which, by the way, the CCFR is going to the Supreme Court to try and get the gun ban overturned. Not just the gun ban. Property rights are on trial. And every step of the way so far, the CCFR has been defeated by the system. The system is very much rigged in Canada. And you don't have property rights in the charter, even though charter rights are fake rights and they can be suspended by the government at any time. You don't even have a fake right to property. But that's what the CCFR is seeking to prove. Not only are they trying to protect people's ability to own firearms and be entitled to a judicious process that's legislative in nature and not just about orders and councils and all the other nonsense that we're forced to deal with because we have a king in this country, they're going to the Supreme Court. So stay tuned for that. But this from the CCFR. Premier Doug Ford congratulates the Vaughn gun owner who shot an armed home invader, successfully defending his family from harm. "I'm glad you shot that guy," is the quote from Ford. I'm not going to make you listen to Doug Ford. Ford Nation encouraged all Ontarians to become legal gun owners while blasting the Liberal gun grab. This is actually good news. We need castle laws in Canada, folks. They've flooded this country with immigration that hasn't filtered anybody out. That is not a racist thing to say. We have a high degree of criminality that's coming into this country legally. They're not even coming in illegally. They're coming through a very porous screen. Getting in here, setting up shop, we have all kinds of organized gangs that are ethnic in nature. And you, the citizen of Canada who is paying for all of this, are often told to just suffer and die alone in your house if you are a victim of crime. And I wish that was satire, but that's often the message from your politicians. Call the police and just wait while criminals that are armed and threatening your family look to harm you. You have a legal precedent, not a right, but you have a legal precedent to self-defense in this country, and people are using it. There have been a number of court decisions over the years that have supported people's right to self-defense. Not right, I'm sorry, privilege. You see, I want to use the word right because it is fundamentally a human right to defend your own life and property against the assault of another person, the violent assault of a criminal who's trying to take your stuff and harm your family. It should be a right, and that's why I have such a hard time sticking to the reality of it, which is a legal precedent is the best you have. But the precedent is getting stronger and stronger over time. I related a story about how there was a citizen's arrest recently in my neighborhood, which was on a public roadway, which involved a person shooting out the tires of a vehicle that was stealing property and hurting people's animals. Stealing people's property, hurting people's animals. Nobody in the van was armed, but the citizen had a shotgun, shot out the tires, was on the phone with the RCMP the entire time. The van load of occupants got arrested. Everybody got arrested, but they released the man who did the interdiction without charge. Things are changing in this country. Again, that is good news. Gun grab fail. Firearms program flops as deadline looms. This from the Western Standard. Great media if you're looking for an alternative source of media. Public Safety Canada announced on Thursday that more than 47,000 prohibited firearms have been declared across Canada after 2 months of the federal government's gun grab program. For individuals, a number of critics say it represents a minuscule fraction of affected firearms. it does represent a minuscule fraction. We're talking hundreds of thousands, possibly a million firearms that they're trying to collect. And this shows a very low participation rate as people await the result of the CCFR case, or they're just telling the government to go pound sand. Because at the end of the day, remember, the people that are being targeted by this legislation aren't the ethnic gangs that we've been talking about. People say, oh, why do you talk about it being an ethnic gang? Because it is. There is no melting pot. Everybody's organized into their own individual ethnic groups. We're not blending together. And there's a big criminal element that threatens harm to all Canadians of every background, race, color, and creed. The people who are being targeted by this ban, by this so-called buyback, which is really just a scheme to steal your property, are legal, lawful, vetted firearms owners, the literal best Canadians. They're the best because they go through screening every single day. They're the best because they have no criminal records. They're the best because they don't have a history of violence. They're the best because even their ex-girlfriends and boyfriends have to sign off on their ability to own firearms. We are screened. We are licensed. We're safe. We're legal. Nobody wants to lose. They're like, firearms ownership is not a cheap endeavor. It requires more money than you can get on social assistance. You have to be a working member of society paying taxes to do this thing. And as such, you're probably owning other things and you don't want to lose your entire life and family and access to these things because you've unlawfully done something in regards to the firearms that most people are just trying to use for sport or hunting. Certainly not criminal enterprise. And look, I understand that the CCFR as well is not everybody's cup of tea. There's a lot of people who want a more extreme position. They want a non-compliance position from every firearms ownership group in this country. Some firearms groups have taken the position of non-compliance, and that's fine. Free to do that. The CCFR's plan is a little bit different. And they're at the finish line now, going to the Supreme Court. They're actually going to have exhausted every legal avenue to try and protect the property of firearms owners. The Supreme Court's the final hurdle. It's the finish line. There's nothing left to do if the Supreme Court decides against the collective ownership of firearms and decides that you have no property rights. It's important work. It's strategic work. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but I would encourage people to understand just what it is they're trying to do, which is different from everybody else. But at any rate, support whatever group you want. On screen is the price of various commodities. And the war in Iran should be clear to everybody. We're on day 20 odd now. We're well into the third week. We're probably entering the fourth week. I've lost track. I'm not even going to bother to count it anymore. It really should be obvious to people now that it is not going according to plan. All the things that I said in the first 2 weeks of this, 2 weeks of this operation have borne out really well. It's ad hoc. We're now talking about ground forces. We'll get into that. And with the tit-for-tat strikes against gas in South Pars oil field, the split between Trump and the Israelis as to war goals, war objectives, and war aims, the retaliatory strikes by Iran, and that's what they were, against Qatar and other oil infrastructure, it seems we have a pause on this because we're talking about bringing down the entire global economy. The effects are already baked in, folks. The damage is already there. Even if the war somehow magically stops tomorrow morning, the damage is already baked into the global economy, and we're all going to have to adjust. And it's possible that this is just the beginning of troubles. Now, this is forcing me, and should be forcing you, to reevaluate the way that you look at assets and the way that you look at the world. So there's a lot of people expressing wonder online about the price of gold is not doing what they thought it would do. They thought it would go up and it's going down and the price of silver is slowly moving down and it just broke a trend line. Might be heading for 50 US per. People are not going to be as interested in a world plagued by war and shortages, which we're coming into. This is an energy emergency. Entire countries may run out of oil. The optimistic view is that Trump will chicken out and leave the Gulf to put out the fire that he has ignited. I don't think Trump's going to leave. Sending troops and different ships. There's more ships on the way to the Gulf today than there was yesterday. I don't think that signals that he's going to chicken out and pull out, whatever you want to call it. There's going to be a double down. This damage is already baked in. Anyway, the point is, we all need to re-examine how we view the world. And as such, I looked at, so just for, I've got an older computer. It's been getting kind of glitchy. In order to maintain this operation and to develop this thing, which I've, you know, since January, I've really decided I need to figure out how to do this long term, take it seriously, buy some licenses, do some whatever. 4 weeks ago, I priced out a computer, put it all together in the cart, decided it was way too expensive that I would wait for prices to come down because I really didn't think we were going to land in this war. I really didn't think Trump was going to do it. He did it. Well, I put together the same thing. First off, availability of hardware is thin, to say the least, because of the AI boom. And the prices are through the roof. And I think they're only going to get higher. And one of the things that I've been talking about on the channel is the real possibility that China may want to take Taiwan. Now, that will be a huge blow to the global economy. We're talking the heart of technology. We're talking the heart of semiconductor production. It would really hurt. I think it would hurt the West far more than it would hurt China, but they want it. Taiwan is theirs. They want reunification. And with every missile that's fired by the United States, with every troop that's sent to the Middle East, with every aircraft carrier that's in the region, distracted by the Iran war, the thinner American stockpiles get and the more committed their troops get in Iran, the bigger the opportunity for China to do something about Taiwan and announce to the world their presence on the world stage. The summit at the end of the month, I haven't looked into this, but they had talked about delaying it. Trump had talked about delaying it. He was cajoling and threatening the Chinese, saying, if you don't send ships to help me open the strait, I may just delay the summit. This is really bad. Trump is trying to cajole NATO into getting involved. They actually came out with a statement that said, hey, if there's a ceasefire, we'll get together, we'll put together some kind of armada, and we'll help open the strait and police the strait and make sure things are all right. But it's conditioned on a ceasefire. Trump condemned them all for it. At the same time, as the U.S. Navy is afraid to go into the strait. At any rate, these are things we can explore later. I'm going ahead with a reorganization of my own life. At the same time as I'm looking at things like food and firewood and access to water, bypasses. I mean, I think I live in a pretty good spot, Saskatchewan and Alberta. I don't think we might have expensive fuel here. I don't think we're going to have fuel shortages. That'll be for other people. If fuel shortages are getting here, we're in big trouble because North America is pretty well positioned as long as the great powers don't start lobbing nukes at each other's mainland. And I think there's a lot of incentive for that not to happen. They might lob nukes at the Middle East, but I don't think they'll get to lobbing nukes at each other right away. But I don't know anymore. My entire thesis and my entire worldview is having to get updated in real time. So with that being said, my commitment to doing this is solid. And so I'm making some big investments to make sure that I can do it for years to come. Not just another year, but for years to come. And it's going to cost a small fortune. I'm going to get some lights. I'm going to do some stuff. If you haven't donated already, might be a good time to do so. If you can't, no shade. That's why everything's free. I want everybody here. But might be a good time to kick up, just to put a bow on that last point. I'm not so much worried about debt. I'm not so much worried about the cost of things. I'm worried about availability. I think there could be some serious shortages that come out of this thing if this war continues. I mean, there's going to be shortages already. There's going to be a famine already. There's already 3 million. I believe it's 3 million. Let me just get the article up if I can find it. Over 3 million Iranians forcibly displaced under U.S.-Israeli bombardment, at the same time as Israel's already displaced 1.2 million people in Lebanon, forced them out of their homes, marched them north, and they're being bombed the whole way up with no plan to house them, no plan to feed them. There's huge consequences. Urea shipments shut down in the Persian Gulf. And one of the interesting things, and I hope I get to it because I got a ton of articles that are kind of buried right now, but that there are many countries, India, Pakistan, China, they're talking to Iran about a vetting system for their ships to pass through the Strait of Hormuz unmolested. They are not talking through the Americans. They are talking directly to Iran. This is another signal that American power is waning before your eyes. It's bad, folks. I've been telling you it's bad. They thought they'd go in and they would just do a decapitation strike and Iran would fall down. The fact is, Iran's never been more united as it is right now. It's not a surprise to me. I was talking about this weeks ago. how there would be no spontaneous revolution, how Iranian, Persian nationalism, the Shia faith, the fact that the Islamic Republic is indeed a constitutional republic that is functioning and has a history of decades-long history of functioning, wouldn't just collapse like a dying star, but would in fact dig in even more. This, as we read about a second U.S. F-35 reportedly hit over southern Iran. Remember how the United States said that they have absolutely destroyed, just like Netanyahu here? I mean, at this point, can you really differentiate between the United States and Israel? Israel's the 51st state. Netanyahu declares Iran's nuclear program and missile production destroyed. I don't believe it. I don't believe it for a second. They said their military was destroyed too, and all of their air defenses, and yet they've now hit two F-35s. Haven't quite shot them down. They've made it back to base. But if you look at a map and you look at the eastern portion of Iran, it's largely been avoided in terms of bombing because they can't get their planes close enough to bomb what's there. And that's where I think all the ballistic missiles are being fired from right now. And a lot of their production, remember, they've been getting ready for this war for decades, and they knew they would be bombed all to hell because it's what the Americans did in Afghanistan. It's what the Americans did in Iraq. And Iran is a very different place from both of those situations. It's a highly technologically advanced country with ballistic missiles that they're raining down all across the Middle East every single day while you're being gaslit by the U.S. president and his people in Hegseth, saying that their war-making capacity has been completely diminished, expecting you to lie to yourself as ballistic missiles are falling all around the region. The headline on screen, oil rises as three more warships, thousands of Marines dispatched to Mideast. Trump blasts paper tiger negative. Let's read the summary. Oil rises on news of a second massive Marine deployment toward the Gulf in a week. The United States does not deploy force that it does not intend to use. There are people who are claiming that this is just saber rattling to try and get the Iranians to surrender. It's not going to work. You need to see pictures, and I'll get to it somewhere. I'm going to go through a bunch of articles pretty quick here. I'll get to the pictures of what the coast looks like. IRGC contradicts BB, says missile production is ongoing. I'm sure it is at some level. There's been a massive destruction inflicted on Iran, but I don't think it's affected much their ability to produce drones and ballistic missiles because they keep firing them, and they claim they have large inventories. They may be exaggerating, but they've tooled their factories underground to a depth that Moabs can't even reach. The energy war is ongoing. Major sites damaged across the region. Haifa refinery hit. Qatar LNG cut by 17% for years. This isn't a quick fix. Kuwait facilities ablaze. Karg Island escalation looms. Trump had been weighing seizure of Karg Island to reopen Hormuz. Thousands of Marines en route. Karg Island is a very small place, very easy target within artillery range of a large chunk of Iran, as well as ballistic missile fire. I think it's going to be a disaster. I said this weeks ago, I don't think it's feasible. And if they seize Karg Island, there is no ability, there is no reason for the Iranians to exercise restraint. Remember, they're in a war for survival. This is how they see the thing. And they're attacking the United States everywhere they are. Doesn't matter if they're in third-party countries or not. They're attacking. Doesn't matter if I approve or not. My opinions and my own morality and my own opinions on what they're doing doesn't matter. I am understanding things from their position and how they see the chessboard. If you go after Karg Island, which is their lifeblood, they will blow up every refinery in the Middle East. And that, my friends, will bake in everything I'm talking about. You have a bit of time right now to do some preparations. I wouldn't say panic, but if there's anything that you're worried about being short of, that you depend on the global economy and the global supply chain for, you might want to pick some of it up, whatever it is. Do the best you can with what you got, even if it's just a few cans of soup. Increase your resilience in any way that you can. Signal of zero restraint from the Ayatollah and the foreign minister. Iran sends warning if energy sites are hit again, which would include a seizure of Karg Island. Leadership structure grows opaque. Supreme leader says enemies will be denied security. That's the statement that's come out of the Ayatollah. We haven't seen him yet, but apparently he's out there somewhere trying to seize Karg Island, which involves going through the Strait of Hormuz. You have to go in by helicopter because you can't send the Navy through the Strait unless they intend to do an assault on the Strait first, land troops on the shoreline first, then go for Karg Island. There's not enough troops in the region to pull that off. You need at least 80 to 100,000 troops. 5,000 Marines isn't going to get it done, which isn't to diminish their combat capacity. But my God, people, you got to realize there's limits even to American power. Now, here are a couple things that are going to present a challenge to the Pretzel Logic people who are trying to make this all seem like some 4733D chess. The headline on screen is U.S. considers lifting sanctions on some Iranian oil. So the U.S. and Israel are at war with these people, but they're thinking about lifting sanctions on some of it to try and quell price rises in the markets and the disruption. Because this disruption, I think Trump is keenly aware that the prolonging this thing and the disruption to global supply chains is eating away his power base. It is going to really hurt him domestically as time goes by. And so he's throwing everything at the wall to try and figure out how to solve this problem. We'll get to Russia next. But this headline should challenge everybody. Why would you lift sanctions on a regime you're trying to choke? Why would you lift sanctions when you're openly, I shouldn't say openly yet, when many people are leaking to the media that you're looking at seizing Karg Island, which would essentially seize Iranian oil if you can pull it off? I don't think they can. I think the generals are probably saying that it's impossible to do. But here's another headline related to Russia. Remember, the United States is selectively lifting sanctions on Russia to try and quell rises and make in oil prices and to make sure the world is supplied. Two shipments of Russian oil and gas head to Cuba in defiance of U.S. before the war began, I believe, in the lead up to the war. I was talking about Cuba. I was talking about how horrible the regime in Cuba actually is and how rich that regime is and how they've got their money shoved in offshore accounts. In no way am I in support of the Cuban top-down regime. But at the same time, we have to look at it from the other side. Cuba is under the most intense blockade it's had to endure over decades of blockades. The people are being starved out. They're living in the dark. And it's the responsibility of the United States that's doing that. They're making the people suffer. The regime itself is still eating well. The regime itself probably has sufficient supplies of oil and gas for themselves. But the people are suffering. And the gamble is that if you choke the people long enough, they will rise up against the regime you want gone. It's not working in Iran. It's clearly not working in Cuba, as there is no spontaneous revolution. These people don't even have firearms. They don't have guns, because that's what, looking at Canada, that's what governments do. They take away all the firearms first, and then they really put the screws to you. But this suffering is largely the responsibility of the United States at this point. And now, with the United States lifting sanctions on Russia, picking up the phone and calling them and asking them for help, when it comes to dealing with the consequences of this disastrous ad hoc war, which is not going according to the very simplistic plan that they set out with at the very beginning, two shipments of Russian oil and gas head back to Cuba in defiance of U.S. They've turned these loaded ships around. They're going back to Cuba, and they intend to deliver. Now, if the United States seizes those ships, I'm telling you the hubris. You can't. And this is something that Trump was supposed to understand. This was one of the beautiful things about Trump and his run and like coming back into it, was the understanding that the United States empire could not maintain itself and it had to be pared back and the focus had to be returned to North America and the hemisphere so that we can all get rich and prosper and our kids could grow up happy, hale, and healthy. Instead, what's happening, for whatever reason, they're trying to hold it all while still advancing. This is classic overextension. Imperial overreach. There's still people who are going to say that the United States isn't an empire, folks. The United States is a republic with an empire. You're either a citizen of the republic with your constitutional rights, which are beautiful, or you're a citizen of the empire, which is to be a citizen of another country in a world that's run by the United States. This is imperial overstretch. They can't hold everything and keep marching forward at the same time, which is exactly what Iran is. It's an attempt to dominate and preserve hegemony, something the United States cannot do. It does not have the resources to do it. That's why the Donroe Doctrine was so beautiful. And so if they seize these ships and they refuse to let this oil go in to ease the suffering of the people, I'm not really sure how you can have your cake and eat it too like that. You can't lift sanctions on Russia. You can't have everything. The United States can't have everything anymore. They can't demand, after saying they don't need NATO, after saying they will leave NATO, after criticizing Europe, and I'm not defending Europe. I don't like the city. I don't like the EU. I don't like their government. I don't like how top-down totalitarian it is. I don't like what they're doing on free speech. I don't like the political repression. I don't like the assassinations of political leaders and the attempted assassinations like people like FICO or the banning of Le Pen or the various things that are going on in the EU. I don't have to like those things to recognize that the United States has been very critical of the EU, very critical of NATO, and has turned around and started demanding help from them, and they've said, go pound sand. We're not getting involved in the mess that you made. You can't have everything. It's a very expensive lesson that I hope Trump summons the humility to learn before it's too late. It may already be too late. The headline on screen, Armageddon scenario for gas markets. This from Financial Times. As Qatar hit by missiles, traders and analysts warn of lasting disruption after damage to facility. We learned about that already. I'm an Australian wholesale fuel trader. Look at this. 66 likes, 68 comments, 9 shares. This is the stuff that media should be picking up. But of course, we have captured media. I'm an Australian wholesale fuel trader. An insider's explanation of what's going on. You can read through this. I'm going to read you just the, I got to find it first, the conclusion, generic thoughts. The situation isn't resolving itself anytime soon. This is after in the article, he criticizes how we're doing hand-to-mouth short-term solutions to try and deal with a long-term lasting disruption. All of this strategic oil releases, the lifting of sanctions, these ad hoc solutions to try and, you know, put something together for the coming weeks to stop the price rise is very short-term thinking for what is becoming a very long-term problem. It was so predictable. Conclusion, generic thoughts. The situation isn't resolving itself anytime soon. Unfortunately, there is a saying in commodity trading, high prices cure high prices and low prices cure low prices. It's true in markets. When the price skyrockets, demand drops off where possible or supply is increased. When there's super low prices, supply reduces. As said, suppliers can't stay in business selling at those low prices. In this current high price situation, supply can't increase right now, so the only lever is to reduce demand. If the price is kept low by governments, demand would stay around. You would have no more supply coming into Australia. Australia only has 32 days of fuel, and you would eventually run out of fuel. Neither is a good situation. If you keep prices low, you keep demand high in a diminishing pool of supply, which only delays the meteoric shock. Later on, you should just let prices rise and curb demand. But because of the stupidity of politics and the expedient needs of politicians, they're going to try and pave this thing over when what they're doing is creating a long-term problem, which will have consequences moving forward. Hegseth says no time frame for war on Iran as Pentagon asked for $200 billion. Went from a couple days, it's going to be done, to a couple weeks, it's going to be done, to no time frame now, we're not even going to put one out. Went from $50 billion in emergency funding to $200 billion. How much time, treasure, and lives are the Americans willing to throw away for this war, which is directed at Israel? At a time, by the way, Netanyahu, this is a quote, Jesus Christ has no advantage over Genghis Khan because if you are strong enough, ruthless enough, and powerful enough, evil will overcome good. He spits on Christianity, which is no surprise if you know where it's coming from. At the same time, another article somewhere buried in here is a headline where it says Netanyahu would prefer to not deploy its troops to Iran. It wants the United States to do it. And Trump looks like, as the lapdog that he seems to be, he's deploying American lives at the behest of Israel. What power does this state have over this man and over the United States that, number one, would protect Epstein and oppose justice every step of the way? Here's another one, actually. You need to watch this. I should have put this early on. This interview is incredible. This is Joe Kent, the guy who resigned. Two things. The whole interview is great, but two things that came out of it. They were identifying the principal threat as Israel to do an act of aggression and bombing against Iran and drawing the region into war. That's what they were telling the administration. And the administration ordered them to stop their investigation into the Charlie Kirk assassination. Now, I don't know if you know this, But days ago, the video footage was released from behind the camera, right behind Charlie Kirk when he was shot. Turning Point was co-opted. And if you don't have questions about that, and you don't look at the sea change in the purpose of Turning Point USA since he was assassinated, they're now going in a direction that Charlie Kirk himself opposed. That direction is very tied into this conflict. Maybe they knew at the time that the war was coming. Maybe we were all played with the no new wars messaging. Maybe Trump is just such a gifted liar that he played to hope, and this was always the intention. I don't know. Not just energy. How the Iran war could trigger a global food crisis. The crisis of a fertilizer shortage threatens global food security amid Iran war. And the Chinese have restricted export of fertilizers out of their country because they see this coming. It's bad. It's really, really bad. And I'm trying to warn you. And I am taking action in my life. I'm not just saying these things into a camera, into a vacuum. I'm trying to increase my resilience. My whole worldview has changed as a result of this event. And for everybody who still thinks this is 42D chess, for everybody who still thinks this is all part of the plan, I challenge you to ask yourself, what would you need to see? What would invalidate your thesis ahead of time? Find something in the future that hasn't happened yet and say to yourself, if I see this thing, then I was wrong, and I need to update my worldview for my own health, for the health of my family, for my own sense of well-being, and for my own accurate understanding of the world. Don't outsource your thinking, not to me, not to Promethean updates or any of the other nonsense that's online right now. Think for yourself and ask yourself, what invalidates my thesis? My thesis was invalidated as soon as the bomb started falling on Iran in a way that signaled general war. I've talked about on this channel for months how everything's been theatrical since Trump's first term. Highly coordinated, highly communicated, back and forth, tit for tat strikes. Even the way the 12-day war was conducted was very... When I say theatrical, I just mean that it was coordinated. It wasn't an organic war. It was not total war. We're this close now to total out-of-control warfare. This close. We're probably already there. But I reserve a little bit back for the fact that oil is still being pumped, that natural gas is still being produced, and that all the infrastructure hasn't been destroyed yet. When that changes, it's over. It is total war, and it's warfare that's going to wage for years, and I hope it doesn't turn nuclear. This is big. So if you don't believe me now and you still think I'm just suffering from TDS, just go... Let me try and be more polite than that, be more diplomatic. You're welcome to think that way, but I would challenge you to ask yourself, what would invalidate my thesis? And get an answer to that question, because it's important that you have an endpoint where you have to acknowledge that everything has not gone according to your plan. I'm Frank Vaughn, and I am going to continue adjusting my life around my updated worldview. And I'll see you in the next one.